My dearly beloved in Christ, I haven't given many talks about abortion because I really haven't found any book that really, even though there's many good books, that would be really effective in speaking to others and trying to teach them or guide them in the right way. But there's an excellent book, Speaking for the Unborn, and there's a copy of the cover in the Breezeway area. This is by an MD and also an attorney. He's got a doctorate in law, too. Stephen A. Christie, a very good writer. And it's called Speaking for the Unborn. But the important part is 30-second pro-life rebuttals to pro-choice arguments. So it's very short. It goes through almost every argument you can think of pro-abortion, and then very logically explained. So most of the sermons directly from this book, and if you have, you're trying to help someone to see the truth, this is very, very good. So I'll just begin from this Dr. Christie. The pro-life movement relies on basic facts, science, and truth to spread its message. The pro-choice movement, on the other hand, survives by denying the truth of abortion, imploring rhetorical deception, trite cliches, and personal attacks, branding their opponents as morons or woman-haters or both. Inevitably, their argument boils down to a simple falsehood. Sex is liberating and should be without consequences. Of course, preserving this falsehood requires great effort. Why? Because the consequences of liberating sex are nothing less than the dead bodies of unborn children and a culture of death that degrades women, children, and families. Denying the truth of abortion is hard work. It requires a concerted effort to be blind to the truth, to be deaf to the truth, and to never, ever speak the truth. Our job, then, is to reveal the truth to those who desperately do not wish to see it, hear it, or speak it, and to do so with intelligence, diligence, and perhaps most importantly, compassion. But we cannot accomplish our task by simply winning arguments. We should focus on winning hearts. And winning hearts takes patience, kindness, perseverance, and a mastery of the facts surrounding abortion. And I think prayer, too. In the end, our constant goal is to hear these words at the end of every discussion or debate. You know, that's interesting. I really never thought about it that way before. This is the sound of a heart opening to the truth. So how we speak. Our success in opening hearts to the truth depends not only on the words we say, but how we say them. The following comprise a strategy for approaching these conversations. First, we speak charitably, intelligently, and persuasively, relying only on facts. Second, we make clear, simple arguments. Three, we're brief. Four, we're always mindful that nearly 25% of women we will speak with have already had an abortion. Many of these women suffer deeply and they deserve our compassion. Okay, what we say. And then from that book you can memorize, or you can just print it off and then give them whatever the question they have, however you want to deal it. But here's what he recommends. A fully memorized but naturally delivered 30-second summary of why I am pro-life. And I'll end the sermon with this. The pro-life arguments, rebuttals to the pro-choice arguments, and the truth. The vast majority of abortion advocates are secular liberals who think religious people are unsophisticated, unthinking, brainwashed, backward, and intolerant Jesus freaks. So if you happen to be religious and you're debating a non-religious person about abortion, and you've made 10 very compelling non-religious arguments for protecting the unborn, but then you happen to mention God or sanctity of life or sin or Bible. Well, you suddenly see the face of the person you're speaking with dramatically change. You can then immediately read their mind, which is saying something like this. Oh, I'm sorry. I hadn't realized you are a freak. Have a nice day. And then every rational, non-religious argument you've made just vanishes. However, if the person's a Catholic, you should tell him or her that those procuring an abortion, the mother included, commit a mortal sin and incur ipso facto excommunication. In other words, they're separated from the Catholic Church, reserved to the ordinary if the abortion is complete. All necessary cooperators, in other words, those that were pushing for it, could be parents, it could be a boyfriend, the doctor and nurses involved in the abortion, etc. All those without whose assistance or advice the effect would not have occurred, if they're Catholic, they're excommunicated too. And of course, they commit a mortal sin. We have many compelling non-religious arguments that powerfully explain why abortion is wrong. There's much debate among those in the pro-life movement as to how we should refer to the unborn, the act of abortion, and those who support a right to abortion. So we'll just give some quick definitions. What's unborn mean? Unborn, instead of using that, it's better just called an unborn child. It's simple, accurate, and honest. And it's also, you can find it in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. It defines child as an unborn or recently born person. Okay, the act of abortion. And then this doctor says, I keep it simple as well. An abortion is the intentional ending of an innocent life. And killing, as Webster's dictionary says, is to cause the death of. Therefore, the doctor says, I refer to abortion as the intentional killing of an unborn child. While the term killing is entirely accurate, some may prefer to say ending the life of an unborn child or the destruction of a living human being. Engage your audience and then use what's right. Pro-choice advocates obviously hate terms like child or killing, but I don't believe we should let them reframe this debate inaccurately by using disingenuous and deceptive phrases such as products of conception, non-viable clump of cells, or ending of a pregnancy. It takes courage to speak up against abortion in today's modern secular culture, a culture that so fiercely advocates for sex without consequences. Whenever and wherever you speak up, you will be ridiculed and maligned. You'll be called an extremist, woman-hater, intolerant, moron, or worse. So just a few basic definitions. Again, all these are in the book. I highly recommend it. Embryo, the unborn from the end of week 1 through week 8. The fetus, the unborn from the end of week 8 until birth. A human being, a member of the species Homo sapiens, living, alive, or life. Whether something is alive is a purely scientific question that science has fully settled. To be alive, remember, this was written by an MD, the following criteria must be met. Cellular organization, growth and development, metabolism, homeostasis, the ability to maintain an internal equilibrium, responsive to stimuli, reproductive capacity, and contains all the genetic information needed to control its development for a lifetime. All 7 of these criteria for life are met at conception. This is a biological fact attested to by the American College of Pediatricians and nearly every embryology textbook used in medical schools. Even Planned Parenthood has admitted that life begins at conception, stating in one of their very own publications that abortion kills life after it has begun. And then a person. Defining person does not require complex philosophical or metaphysical analysis. Despite claims to the contrary, its definition is clear and simple and found in nearly every dictionary. As Merriam-Webster states, as its very first definition, a person is a human. And then body part. Science defines body part as a structure that shares the same genetic code as the rest of the body, like an appendix, arm, tonsils, heart, etc., and does not direct its own development. So these are some basic developmental milestones. Day one, a fully alive human being with unique DNA. Week five, the heart's beating. Week six, brain activity is present. Week nine, the baby sighs, stretches, moves its head, opens its mouth, sucks its thumb. Week 13, the body is sensitive to touch. And then week 21, it's potentially viable. So these are some, again, this sermon's gonna be a little bit longer, but I think it's really important, and we rarely talk about this. And if you get the book, we're about halfway through, okay, or more. Some pro-choice arguments and their rebuttal. So here's some of the arguments. A fetus or embryo is not alive. It's just a clump of cells. Nobody really knows when life begins. It's really a personal or philosophical or religious question. So the first rebuttal, whether or not something's alive is a purely scientific question that science has fully settled. There's overwhelming scientific consensus that from the moment of conception, an embryo fulfills all seven criteria of biological life as stated by the American College of Pediatricians and nearly every medical school textbook. So what you're trying to call a mere clump of cells is by definition a living human being. Second, look, life begins at conception, and that's a simple scientific fact that's no longer even debated in the scientific community. The largest recent survey of over 5,000 biologists from 1,000 worldwide institutions revealed that fully 96% agreed with the statement, human life begins at conception. And they were not a collection of pro-life religious or conservative scientists. In fact, these biologists self-described as 89% liberal, 85% pro-choice, and 63% non-religious. So let's please stick to the most basic scientific fact in this debate. Life begins at conception. Third, if you want to talk about when human life actually begins, there's really not much to discuss. The science is fully settled on this. Overwhelming scientific consensus holds that life begins at conception. What the pro-choice movement is really talking about, and I think this is the essence of everything, is not when something is alive, but when you think a baby's life begins to matter. Really, that's the essence. And that's not a scientific question at all. Pro-choicers are simply deciding which human lives they deem undeserving of life. Fourth, even the former director of Planned Parenthood, Dr. Ellen Guttmacher, wrote that when fertilization has taken place, a baby has been conceived. Fifth, even Planned Parenthood, the United States' largest abortion provider, admits that life begins at conception. It said in its own publication that abortion kills life after it has begun. And six, if we define death as a sensation of a heartbeat and brain waves, why shouldn't the existence of a heartbeat and brain waves define life? And then here's another pro-choice thing. A fetus or embryo is not a human being. It's just a potential human being. An embryo is no more human than an acorn is an oak tree. A fetus might eventually become a human, just as an acorn might eventually become a tree. But an embryo is not yet a human being. First, there's simply no such thing as potential human being. It's an unscientific, made-up term. Being human is not a matter of degrees. You're either human or you're not. To be human is to be a member of the species Homo sapiens, nothing more, nothing less. The unborn are fully living, genetically unique members of our species. Science makes this perfectly clear. They might be smaller, weaker, and less developed, but they're living human beings. Second, the terms embryo and fetus have never referred to non-humans. Embryo and fetus are simply two stages in the development of living humans, no different than the terms toddler and adolescent. An embryo doesn't become a human being. An embryo is a human being. And here's another. An embryo or fetus is just part of a woman's body, and a woman can do whatever she wants with her own body. The embryo is in no way a part of the mother's body. Science clearly defines body part as a structure that shares the same genetic code as the rest of the body, like the appendix, arm, tonsils, or heart, and does not direct its own development. The unborn child has a completely unique genetic code. Half of the time, it even has a different gender. It also directs its own development. So the embryo is clearly a separate living human being residing temporarily inside his or her mother. That's the science of the matter. And then this, my body, my choice. A woman has a right to control her own body. And they use that so much, but remember during COVID, we use those, people try to use that argument about wanting to refuse a vaccine. And that didn't work. My body, my choice. You still had people first. So, but a woman has a right to control her own body. Okay, first, I don't believe a woman has the right to do whatever she wants to someone else's body. A pregnancy always involves two bodies. And then the author puts something interesting, sometimes more. So I'm a twin, sometimes there's triplets, etc. So I remember the doctor told my mother, you're either going to have one big baby or twins. And then there were twins ran in my family, so I'm fortunate. Okay, second, there's overwhelming scientific consensus that an embryo or fetus is not part of a woman's body. Instead, it's a genetically distinct living human being. Another body. So a woman is free to do whatever she wants with her own body within reason and morality, right? But she's not free to inflict harm on someone else's body. And then this other one, a woman has a right to choose. Okay, first of all, evil has no rights. Therefore, a person has the freedom to do evil, but no right. So a woman always has the freedom to choose. The choice she has, though, is not whether or not to kill her baby. It's whether or not to have relations in the first place. When a woman chooses to have relations, she does so with the full knowledge that there's a real possibility that the act may create a new living human being inside her. It's certainly reasonable then for society to expect that an adult, one who knowingly consented to that risk, to live temporarily with inconvenience, even significant inconvenience, if the only alternative is killing a child. Second, the doctor said, I'm also very pro-life, but just one less choice than you. I believe you have a lot of choices. And then here's again something very simple, very important. You can choose abstinence, adoption, or motherhood. I just don't believe you should choose. You can choose to kill your baby. You say a woman has a right to choose. To choose what exactly? It's strange that so many who support abortion are afraid to actually use the word. They don't call themselves pro-abortion, it's pro-choice. I wonder what they're afraid of. Why don't you just say what you mean? And here's the essence again. I want the right to choose to kill my living baby. Does that really sound like a right you want to defend? And it's not a right. The next one, I can't afford a baby now. Having a baby now would devastate my career. I'd have to quit school, putting my entire future at risk, etc. Okay, first, yes, having a baby can be terribly inconvenient. But when did it become okay to kill a living person simply because we feel we can't afford him or her, or because the child might interfere with our own personal plans? If it's unacceptable to kill a living baby the minute after she's born, it's also unacceptable to kill her before she's born. Second, if the unborn is not a living human being, then no justification for abortion is necessary. But if the unborn is a living human being, then no justification is adequate. And third, being a burden on someone is never justification for killing them. Fourth, a mother cannot end the life of her unborn child for the same reason that she cannot kill her two-year-old toddler when that child is a hardship. And you've heard about that. Many of you have raised two-year-olds. It's called terrible twos, right? Both are living human beings entitled to a right to live. Just as there are resources in society to help a mother care for her two-year-old during times of hardship, there are also resources available for struggling mothers during pregnancy. Crisis pregnancy centers, religious charities, private charities, and government assistance. Okay, what about rape and incest? How can you be so callous and uncaring? Where is your compassion? First, the extremely rare cases of rape and incest are among the most common arguments made in support of abortion. It's an attempt to take the exceptional case and say it somehow applies to all cases. That's just faulty logic, and we never make laws based on the exceptional case. If rape and incest, rape and incest account for 1/200th of all abortions, 0.5%. So 99.5 cases are not dealt, you have nothing to do with rape or incest. Second, the violence of abortion is no solution to the violence of rape. Where else do we solve one horrible thing with another equally horrible thing? A child is a child regardless of the circumstances of its conception. And then the third, the calculus is simple. If it's not a human being, you can do whatever you want with it. But if it's a human being, you can't do anything to it. And then lastly, the last argument, where they attack the person, not their argument. You're a woman hater. You're just callous and uncaring. You're just a moron. You're just a wacko religious extremist, or you're just intolerant. And then the doctor wrote, I don't find it useful to debate personal attacks. If, though, you'd actually like to debate the real issues related to abortion, I'd love to discuss them with you, and I promise not to attack you personally. But if your best defense of abortion is to simply attack me personally, then I suspect you really have no legitimate arguments to make. And then lastly, I'd just like to give the very quick 30-second summary. So why am I pro-life in 30 seconds? And if you want to time it, you can time it, okay? I am pro-life, first, because I am pro-science. There's an overwhelming scientific consensus that life begins at conception. Because social justice begins in the womb. Every living human being is entitled to equal protection under the law, And the most fundamental of human rights, the right to life itself, being a burden on someone is never justification for killing them. Because I am pro-woman, abortion degrades women, treating their fertility as a defect, which enables men to use and then abandon women when they are most vulnerable. Abortion never empowers women, only the men who wish to exploit them. Because I am against violence, abortion is not only immoral, but it's also an act of extreme violence against the most innocent and vulnerable. Because of visible evidence, ultrasound and MRI now clearly reveal to the world what's moving inside a woman's body, a living body. And lastly, because of objective morality. If abortion is the killing of an innocent, unborn child, then it's immoral and cowardly to remain silent. And then the doctor ends with this. That's why I'm pro-life. So why do you think abortion is okay? In the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen.